there's this fear of like, what will I do without my partner?
Yeah.
And never this, what could I do without my partner? Hi, my name's Alyssa.
And my name is Bridget.
And you're listening to Money Feels,
the podcast where we discuss how to minimize the damage from the most catastrophic financial event, which is divorce.
I was going to say, you have to be more specific. There are so many catastrophes that we talk about on this podcast.
I don't know. I think this is the most common, biggest one, like single event.
That makes sense.
As like two of three people on this call have gone through it.
Yes, exactly. Which brings us to our next point, which is that we have Annie from Unbroke today with us. And hi, Annie.
Hi.
And maybe you can introduce yourself for some of our listeners who may not know you.
Absolutely. So I'm the founder of Unbroke, which is a platform that teaches basic personal finance to women. I'm also a lawyer. So I have a unique perspective on divorce. And I think we're going to touch on prenups a bit today, too. Having been through a divorce myself, I do want to add the caveat that nothing that I say here is to be taken as legal advice. This is just me speaking from personal experience.
That's a really important caveat. One we should probably lawyer. Give on every episode, but don't. Okay, well, how does your money feel today, Annie?
It feels a bit tight these days, generally, I would say, but...
Yeah, I see your TikTok budgets. They do go pretty tight.
Yeah, there's always a bit of shock at how you go from such a high number down to like $49 a paycheck for fun. But yeah.
Tight, but surviving?
Surviving, definitely. Yeah, I know that I'm in a pretty good position compared to a lot of people and a lot of single moms, for sure. Mm-hmm. So
that's fair. Yeah. How does your money feel, Bridget?
I mean, you probably saw my Instagram the past few days, no budgets, just vibes.
Yes, I really like that motto.
Going crazy, choosing my basement finishes because I found the contractor I hired was very like budget conscious. And then the suppliers he sent me to were like not showing me nice things. And I was like, where are the nice things? And they're like, oh, those are out of your budget. And I was like, show me. And then I was like, yeah. I'm getting this.
Your budget can change, right?
Yes. I want it to be nice. Like I use yeah. the stuff in my house every day. So I don't know. So I went a little overboard, but I can't be allowed in stores where there's like such a big scale of quality and it's tied to price. Like there's sometimes I wish I wasn't single and alone choosing these things because I need someone to slow me down. But now the damage is done. So
I mean, okay. The contractor was trying to slow you down and it still didn't work. So I don't think you're missing an extra person.
That's pretty bad when the person like actually selling you the item is like, are you sure that you should do this?
Yes.
How does your money feel, Alyssa?
My money feels the same as it has all 2024. I was just trying to think of any feelings and there's nothing there. No feelings. Also, no feelings, just vibes.
I love it.
Okay, well, we'll get into today's conversation. I don't know where we should start, but maybe both of you can give kind of a background into your experiences with divorce as people who have been there before.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a big experience because I wasn't married for very long and I was married in my 20s when I had like no money. So when my ex-husband and I parted ways, there was just like nothing to split up generally. And because we weren't married very long, there was no spousal support and we didn't have children together. So there was nothing there to split up. So a pretty clean divorce as far as things go. The only experience I had is that it is such a big financial upheaval. You go from a two-income household where you were sharing a lot of the cost of living to then having to start all over on your own again. And I found Annie on TikTok and I love her content because she makes all these great budgets. And I just live for your comment section, even though you seem to have way more patience with it than I do. Like the number of times you have to explain what like why you I'm pay spousal support. Or yeah, or the lawyer one kills me. Like,
I'm a lawyer.
I remember, and I also remember one time someone commented on yours and they're like, wow, you really got fleeced in your divorce. Like, maybe you should have gotten a lawyer. And I was like, oh my God, she is a lawyer.
That was a good one. Yeah. Yeah. People have a lot of feelings about my financial situation with my ex more than I do, it seems, honestly.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, ours was not. Yours sounds amazing in terms of divorces. ours is a little more involved, I would say. We had been together for a decade and married for 4, and we had our first child before we got married. So in terms of the law, we'd been like in a interdependent relationship for about 5 years. And then, yeah, we had 2 kids together. So I made double what he made at the time that we separated. Yeah. So what that meant, and child support's super easy. Like, it's people are like, why are you paying child support? I'm like, literally, it's just like you go online and you'd click in, like, this is what I make, this is what he makes, this is the custody situation. It's like, boom, here's your number.
Yeah, there's a table on the government website. Because while I had an easy divorce, I later had an unplanned pregnancy almost immediately after, because I'm a goof. So I had that experience. But child support is so straightforward.
So straightforward. Easy.
It is spousal support that's a little bit murkier in how you divide it.
And then, like you say, the upheaval of divorce, like we were living in a single family home. And then I moved out into a condo in the same neighborhood. And I mean, you have to furnish a new place and then you have legal fees at the same time. And then you're paying for a new place all alone. Whereas previously we'd split the expenses of one home together. Right. So after we separated, which was the fall of 2022, just went through my entire finances and kind of did an overhaul of like, what does it look like now? What's it going to look like into the future? Because we had certain plans as a couple, but that changes when you get a divorce. Like, you have to look at your retirement plans, your plans for your kids and their education. Are you still able to do what you wanted to do and everything?
And you have 2 kids or 3?
Yeah. 2 little girls.
2.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is shocking to me. One thing to hear that child support is this easy, considering how hard men make it look. And the second thing is just, you're both talking about this so casually, but I feel like for a lot of people, this is so much more overwhelming. Like, you both are like, oh, well, you have to do A, B, C. You have to consider like D, E, F. And most people are panicking about just the very basics of like, what am I going to do?
Well, I think we maybe both have some distance from it. Like, now I've been divorced twice as long than I was married or with my ex-husband in total. And you've been divorced for more than a year, right?
Yeah, 18 months. Well, I should say we've been separated 18 months. Technically, we're not divorced because I still have that on my to-do list. file divorce papers. But, you know, it's like, do laundry, get groceries, get divorced. So anyway, but yes, 18 months we've been separated. So distance. But I think too, like for me personally, as a lawyer, I'm able to look at it in a bit of a more detached way because I've never worked in family law as a lawyer, but I was a legal assistant before I became a lawyer, and I did work for family lawyers. So I've seen the worst of it, and you definitely don't want to get yourself into that situation. So yeah, I mean, for the real issue for us, my ex is a great dad. So custody was easy. We just, the kids can be 50-50. Like, our kids deserve to have the most time with each of us that they can. And then for the house, it was pretty easy because it was a financial decision for me to move out. And then spousal support was really the only issue. So I have a TikTok about this, but what I did was just like, okay, you're seeking this much and how much is it going to cost me to fight you on it?
Yeah.
What do I do here? So I took that very detached. I wasn't looking at the emotion of it. And I'm able to do that, I think, a bit because I am a lawyer. That's what we do, right? Is take extraneous information out and just narrow it down to the facts. And
so what does spousal support look like for you then?
So I'm paying $1,000 a month. That is tax deductible. So he has to claim taxes on it and I get to deduct that. But $1,000 a month for 2 years from the separation. And then after that, it goes down to $850 a month. So after you take into consideration taxes, it's, you know, $600-$700 a month for me.
And how long do you have to pay the $850 for? A long time or?
2 more years. Yeah. It is quite long. Yeah.
I
feel like it's long.
Yeah. What I love, because it's on every single one of your TikToks where you break it down, is the shock that people have that a woman is paying spousal support.
Big shock. Yeah.
Yeah. And the comments are so misogynistic and ill-informed and just generally stupid, because they're like, yeah, your ex got the bag, and they're like, good for him and stuff. And I'm like, you guys, this is like such a small amount of money. Like, this man isn't like retired on what you're giving him. It's like less than a part-time job. And everyone's like, yeah, he really did well. You're a sucker. And that's the other thing. People call you a sucker for paying spousal support. And I'm like, again, this is like a very legal thing. They look at, because I think how they calculate it, and you can probably get more insight, is they look at the lifestyle that you had when you were together, and then you're essentially kind of like weaning him off that lifestyle by still providing some economic support until it's, but it's not forever. It's just, they're normally for a short term.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like it was designed back when you would have a couple married for 30 years, and usually the woman, 99.999% of the time, would be a stay-at-home mom or, you know, like underemployed, while the man pursues this career, and she makes all these sacrifices because of his career and, you know, to raise the children, etc. And then 30 years down the road, he decides to leave her, and she's completely hooped, because she is, how does she go back into the workforce at this point and make, so there is like, yes, she does have an obligation to do that, go get some training, etc. But yes, like you say, it's a weaning. And you know, honestly, from my perspective too, it was like, by giving him this, my kids are able to stay in the home. It ultimately improves their quality of life when they're with their dad. So, you know, I'd rather pay him than pay a lawyer to fight it.
100%. And yeah, I'm glad you said that, because legal bills are crazy, which you know as a lawyer. And while I didn't have a legal fight for my divorce, I did for like child support for my child. And I remember even like doing the math on that, I was spending so much on lawyer fees. I remember at one point, like for a few months, I spent more than I was earning an income, and I was furious. But I was doing this calculus where I'm like, this is an investment that I have to make now. It's going to take many years of him paying child support to even get back what it cost me to seek it. And you're like doing this calculus is like, is it worth it? Is the fight worth it? Because you are just arguing via legal professionals, and he was self-representing, which was hilarious.
Oh, fun for him.
Yeah. But it was so expensive, and you have to weigh not only the out-of-pocket cost, but like, how will this come back to me and into my family and impact my child? And there's such thing as like just go away money, right? Like I could have even fought for more, but I was like, make the fight go away, make like your nuisance go away, and just let it be.
Yeah, we call those a nuisance claim or PFO money, please F off money.
So, yeah, which is a real thing. And I think sometimes depending on the type of divorce or custody agreement you have, like you have to keep a clear head of what the end game is here. The courts are not a place to be petty or wage a war. It's because it will just waste money. You're not going to gain any ground. You're not going to get revenge. I know like some relationship endings are very messy, and people really want to like drive the point home that you hurt me by using the legal system. And it's just like, it's like taking poison yourself.
Yeah. I've heard family lawyers say that the only people who win in those situations are the lawyers.
100%.
Like it's not, you know, it's not going to benefit either of the spouses, the kids, certainly not. So I don't know. like you say, there's other factors too, right? There's the financial factors, but then it's like the stressors of going through something like that and how that's going to impact on you and your kids. And yeah, lots of things to take into account.
And that's why I love your TikToks, because they're so pragmatic and you're like, this is just an expense. I just pay it and you like move on, and your comment section like is in an emotional tailspin.
I know.
I'm curious, like, what either of you would recommend for someone who is potentially looking at entering a divorce or is already there, how they can kind of emotionally and financially prepare for this decision and this big catastrophic life change, as you described it, Bridget.
Yeah, I can't speak for everyone, but I think divorce is a last resort for most couples. Like, most people don't want that. Like, if you're choosing divorce, it's because you actually can't have a happy life together anymore. So hopefully, like, for most people, the emotional upheaval of the relationship is kind of over by the time you really settle on divorce. And it's sad, but maybe some of the issues have worked out, because it's usually from ongoing long-term problems in the relationship. Financially, I don't know how you prepare, because I was not prepared at the time.
Yeah, divorce is a really poor financial decision. The reasons that we get divorced are like, it's very much to do with the emotions. Yeah, and so I think what you said earlier, Bridget, to your point, like, just keeping your eye on like the end goal. And because I think people get caught up so much in the emotions of the relationship and its breakdown and the many years and all the things that were said.
Yeah, you want things to be fair, and it's just not going to be fair. It's just not a fair situation.
It's just going to be what it is. And really looking at that cost benefit analysis. And I would be asking my lawyer, like, what do you think this is going to cost me if I fight this? Because, you know, like, I had my lawyer saying, oh, you know, maybe you shouldn't be paying this much spousal support. But where was the cost benefit analysis in that? Like, I did that on my own because I am a lawyer and able to do that. But I think asking that question, right? Okay, well, if I fight it, what's it going to cost me? And I guess you never know how the other party is going to react. So that's another factor. But yeah, just keeping in mind that, like, it's, yes, there's tons of emotions, but financially, this is a huge deal, and let's be practical about it financially.
And you can just straight up ask your lawyer all of those questions, because then I would be like, tell me the financial outcome if this and this happens, and they'll legally
have to give you an answer. That's their job.
the thing about I did some Googling and found out that the cost of the average trial for divorce is between $20,000 and $40,000. I thought that was extremely low.
Low?
To be honest.
Yes. Yeah. That's got to be the trial. Because if you think about it, okay, so I used to charge, when I was in private practice, $430 an hour was my rate. Wow. Say you're doing 10-hour days because you're in court for like 8. You get up to that amount with a 5-day trial easily. But that doesn't include any prep.
Right.
So the prep, I'm going to need weeks of prep to run a trial. So yeah, you don't know how any situation's going to go as a lawyer. So you're not able to give like firm numbers. This is going to cost you this, that, etc. But you can give ballparks.
Okay. So divorce is extremely expensive. And knowing all of this, can you, for listeners, because some of them probably haven't seen your TikTok as they're listening, why did you not have a prenup to kind of protect you from having to pay spousal support at the end?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess, like you, Bridget, like when we got married, we were in our early 30s, but when we started dating, we were quite young, like in school young, and then we had a child together, and then we got married. Quite quickly, all of that happened. But so I thought, okay, well, we don't really have anything. You know, we don't have assets. We have debt. We each have debt that we've incurred through school, but that's it. So we don't need one. But that's not necessarily the advice I would give to someone else
who
is in my shoes. Yeah. I'm not like looking back and being like, oh gosh, I wish I would have gotten a prenup and then I would be paying spousal support. Like, it's fine. I've made my peace with my spousal support. and everything else.
You're almost done anyway, right? You only have like...
Right. 2.5 years. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, what I guess I didn't think about at the time, and this is funny because I'm a lawyer and like, you know, should have maybe thought about it. It's, I swear this isn't a reflection on the quality of my legal services. but just that what you can do with a prenup too is protect your future assets.
Oh, you can. Okay.
Okay. So that's, you can. So that's not something that I really thought about at the time. Future assets, inheritances, spousal support, right? So all of those things are fair game in a prenup. And it just wasn't in my contemplation at the time. But that is something I think if you're a young couple and you're thinking about cohabiting or getting married, and that's the other thing that we should talk about is cohabitation. You can be deemed like, right?
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that because I think in most or all of the provinces in Canada, after you live together for a certain year, they essentially consider you married anyway. Like in Alberta, isn't it just 1 year?
Yes.
It's 3 years.
Oh, it's 3 years.
It's three in Alberta. Yeah. But it does vary province by province.
Okay.
So you'd have to look into what province you're in as to what, how long it is. But yeah, so it's 3 years in Alberta and then you're basically essentially deemed, you're not deemed married because there's different ways you can get divorced. You're deemed like a interdependent partners basically. And
right.
Then yes, the same law or similar laws will apply to your situation. So what you can do in that, if you're not going to get married, but you're living together and it's been X number of years, so you're going to be like deemed after a certain period of time, is get a cohabitation agreement, which is the same thing, prenup, pre-cohabitation.
What about people who are married that don't have a prenup? Can they get a postnuptial agreement?
Not for myself, but
I'm just curious, like how many agreements we can get here. We can get them before we're married.
I do know people who have signed them after they're married, so it is a possibility.
So, because my understanding or what I had been told previously is you can't get a document that breaks the law. So if the law is we split things 50-50 or you have to pay, like, I don't think you can get a prenup that says you don't have to pay child support or something like that, right?
So child support, limitations? You're right. Yeah. Child support, you're right. You can't contract out of child support. But basically what they've done with family law, and so this comes, there's family laws more than just these things, but property division and then spousal support is they've set defaults, right?
Okay.
But you can contract out of them. Now,
okay,
a court could always overrule that if it's challenged. And there's all sorts of bases on which you could challenge a prenup. So if you're getting one, make sure to get proper legal advice, because if you're taking all the steps to enter into this contract, you want to make sure that it's going to be enforced.
And I guess the threat of it being challenged depends. If you have a lot of assets, it's kind of attractive for your ex-partner to challenge it.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that it's more common, not so much the property division, but spousal support, because things can really change.
Okay.
And so the court will, they want to give effect to what the parties have agreed to, but they're also looking at all of the circumstances to see if this is fair and equitable.
So if you get a prenup or a cohabitation agreement, is that a document that you would necessarily or potentially need to update? Like, should you update it every 3 to 5 years based on your relationship circumstances, or is that weird?
You could. So you can write into the agreement, you know, this can be varied upon mutual agreement by the parties in writing. And then, or you could build contingencies in, right? I have a friend who's looking at a prenup right now, and she's considering waiving spousal support, but would build in a contingency because they're not planning on having children. But say they do have children, then a contingency would be built in that would reverse her waiver of spousal support, if that makes sense.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so what
you can do a lot of things with these things.
I know. That's what I was going to be my next question, is what are the legal requirements for a prenup to be valid?
So I did a bit of research on this, and it is quite onerous. And there's good reason for that, right? Because it's essentially a waiver, right? So the legislators have decided, like, this is how we want things to work as between families when they separate. And so each party is entitled to certain things. They have certain rights. And when you enter into a prenup, you're burying that. So one way or the other, or maybe both ways, you're waiving rights that you otherwise have at law.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's the same as, you know, when you go to like those indoor play parks or like even when you go skiing and you sign a waiver, they like, they big bolded yellow highlighting, red outline. This is waiving rights you have to sue,
right,
et cetera, et cetera. So it's quite onerous. There's an acknowledgement. There's got to be financial disclosure. And then each party has to get independent legal advice. So you can't just go to one lawyer and have them draft up a contract. That you can do that, but then that lawyer is going to send you to another lawyer, a separate lawyer, to look it over separately. It's called independent legal advice. But yeah, they really want to make sure that you understand rights that you have and the fact that you're waiving them. So it is quite onerous.
Honestly, it just sounds like a lot of work and a big privilege to even be able to get a prenup in that regard, because you do have to pay two lawyers.
Yeah.
And spend all of this time discussing with your partner.
But is that cheaper than paying spousal support for years?
Yes. Well, yeah, that's it. That's exactly, that's the cost-benefit analysis, correct?
Yes. Yeah, we go back to that, yeah.
But I'm curious because, like, this just sounds so uncomfortable for
planning for your relationship,
right?
To end.
Like, yeah. If I were to have pursued this, I don't even know how I would approach that conversation in the first place.
Yeah.
Do you guys feel like you would, like, how would you ask your partner?
Now I would, but I'm in a considerably different financial position. And having gone through the experiences of divorce and seeking child support and having a better understanding of the legal system. And yeah, I would be very casual about it now. But I also feel like I can't live with someone ever again because the financial stakes are too high. To be honest, like, this is just like, even when Annie was just explaining it, I'm like, oh my God, this is so stressful. Like, I'd rather just live alone in my house where everything's mine and I have my money and like, we can just go on trips together. We don't need to move in. Why do you have to move in? That's crazy.
You can move in for 2.5 years and then you have to leave.
Yeah, then I'm like, get out for a year and then you can come back. But it's like if things are good and you love each other, like, don't get the government involved.
Annie, if you were to do it all over again and decided that you did want a prenup, like, how would you approach that conversation?
So legit, I went on like a second date on Monday and we talked about prenups. Like,
was he a lawyer too?
I would say, like, do it as early as possible, because then you're not, you know, it's not surprising anyone. It's like, obviously we talked about it in the context of like, oh, I'm going on this podcast today talking about prenups, but drop it, right? And I think, Bridget, like you say, we're at a point in our lives that I feel like the other person, probably being at a similar point in their lives, would probably be like, okay, this makes sense, and not in any way shocked. But I mean, if I were younger and this was something that was important to me, I think just emphasizing that this is taking the law into your own hands, and it's a wise financial decision. And it could cost you, I mean, like, I don't know, 50% of marriages end in divorce, right? And I think second marriages, it's a lot higher. So if we put a little bit of planning into this now and set out our expectations, then it would potentially avoid a lot of expenditures down the road if this does end in, you know, the worst.
Yeah, I think, like, it's protection that, like, people don't like to think about it the same you don't like to think about life insurance. Like, no one likes to plan for when they die and how people will have to live on without them, but it's responsible and prudent to do so. And I think a lot of this is the same thing, because no one wants their relationship to end, but you want to be protected if that happens.
And I was thinking about it this way too. It's a little bit awkward at the start of an agreement or a relationship, but it's really, you know, difficult to sort these things out when your relationship is breaking down or has just broken down.
And you're so angry when would you, at each other, yeah.
Exactly. When's the better time to do it? Up front, when you're all hunky-dory and in love? Or when things have broken down, and this is why divorce just gets so expensive, is because there's so much emotion involved at that time.
Is a prenup one of the only ways you can protect yourself financially in the case of divorce? Because I feel like we've kind of touched on this before, Bridget, but all of your finances, whether you keep them separate or you merge them, are combined at the end of the day and when you go through divorce. So is that the only way to protect yourself?
Yeah, I have a TikTok about you need your own money as a woman. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, because a lot of people have commented, oh, but isn't it just all shared anyway? Yes, like it does become shared property unless you have a prenup that sets this out. It does become shared property when you're married or in a common law relationship. So yes, the prenup is the way to change that. But when I say you need your own money, I just mean you need access to your own money.
Yeah.
Because like you need your own credit card, bank account, so that, you know, if things go south, you're not financially relying on someone else or joint accounts that person can take all the money out of. Like you need your own access to your own funds, basically. But yeah, a prenup is the way to do it, definitely, to protect your financial assets when you're getting married.
Yeah. I mean, I say that a lot too. And I think people get really uncomfortable because they've been told or taught or seen growing up that everything has to be combined and shared. And so when I say like, oh, me and my husband have separate emergency funds and our own credit cards and all of these separate accounts where one or the other person is the primary account holder, because it can't just all be in one person's name, a lot of them don't even realize that that is a reality, that, you know, that those things can happen to you. Because someone in my life has experienced that, where their partner took them off of their mortgage and
yeah,
their partner took all of their money out of their joint accounts, and you know, they're still in the middle of the divorce, but she hadn't even yet moved out, and all of these things were starting to happen.
Yeah.
So like you said, there are some things you can do to protect yourself before you go through a divorce. But ultimately, the only thing that is going to actually stop some of those things from happening is that waiver where you sign away one person's rights or both.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that like people don't want to talk to about it. And there is kind of this culture of like, why are you planning for the end of your relationship? And like, or you don't really love each other because you won't combine everything, or you don't trust each other. But I honestly think that's like trickle down way of controlling women. Because if you can't like it's one thing to tell them to combine their finances with their husband, but to add that layer of shame is really what gets people into those situations. If everyone was like chill about people having their own bank accounts, more women would be financially independent from their husbands. Mm-hmm. And then more women would have financial autonomy. And we can't have that, you guys, because then women will just like do whatever they want.
Can you imagine?
Well, and I think that is why there is the shock and awe with your content, Annie. And I think maybe I'm wondering, like, is that part of the reason you didn't do the prenup thing too? Because were you ever thinking like, I'm going to be the high income earner in my relationship? Or was that something you ever considered?
Yeah, when we met, he was in nursing school and I was in law school. So I knew that he had an earning potential of, you know, you kind of know what nurses mm-hmm. make, high, like just below 100 or just above 100, right?
Yeah.
Whereas with a lawyer, it varies a lot. Some lawyers make $1 million a year. Some make $65,000 a year. But I knew that I had the potential to make a lot more. And that was sort of how I thought I would be the higher income earner, for sure. But yeah, I just like spousal support wasn't really on my radar. And it just... It, like I said, to me, it's not a massive deal now. So, mm-hmm. It is what it is, but yeah, certainly, like, it's something that I would advise young people to think about.
Yeah, I know this isn't necessarily related to the prenups or spousal support or anything, but on your TikToks, and I think I said this already, the thing I love about it is that you are a high earning woman. And when you break down your budget, it is so fascinating to see how, because you're, I know these stats inside and out because I'm obsessed with it, but the 1% for women starts at about $160,000 per year. Isn't that crazy?
Wow, so I'm a 1%er.
You're a 1%er woman, like, because you're well That's above crazy. That. Yeah. And it's funny when you break it all down, how quickly that goes. And I know I love your comment section where people are like, I make 1/3 that and I'm still doing better. But I think it shows the cost of living in Canada. It shows the cost of raising children. It shows that even when you have these really high lucrative salaries, they don't stretch as far as many people think they will in their imagination. I think you live a great life and your daughters are well cared for, but it is funny to see, yeah, a 1%er, and I think I just watched your TikTok this morning and there's like $200 left over out of your bi-weekly.
It was above 300 this paycheck.
Oh, okay.
I got a little raise, so.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's so fascinating to watch, because I love looking at other people's budget. Alyssa and I actually review them for Patreon subscribers, and it's like one of our favorite things to do. And yeah, it's just fun and interesting to see. And that's what I love about your TikTok. And I just love seeing a high earning, like, self-sufficient single woman that's even doing the spousal support thing, as annoying as it is, but approaching it in a way that you're like, this is just a bill I have to pay, like my other expenses. Eventually it will be over and then I'll get to spend that money on myself and my family the way I want to.
Yeah, I mean, why would I waste a bunch of energy being upset and, you know,
resentful about it? Because it's the internet. Everyone wastes energy being upset. It's TikTok. Isn't that what it's for?
Yeah, well, my commenters can be upset and outraged by it. That's good.
Well, I think that just goes to show again, too, like the emotional side of money is so much more valid than we give it credit for, because you are a professional and you've done the numbers and you still feel like this is the right choice for you. And I think that just in knowing that is peaceful, because even though you still are in a situation where you have, $300 left over at the end of the month, you know that it was the right choice.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. My kids are happy, healthy, right? Like, can't complain.
Yeah. You go on great ski trips. I've seen them.
Yeah. But my oldest is getting dangerous on the hill at this point. Oh,
that's awesome.
I think that's like the outcome of almost every single woman I talk to after they go through a divorce or a separation, is they're all better off. They're all happier. They all go through this period of financial strain or financial difficulty. But in the end, they bounce back within 3 to 5 years and everything in their life is as it should be. And I think there's this fear of like, what will I do without my partner?
Yeah.
And never this, what could I do without my partner? 100%. Reframe, which I think is really important for women to consider as well.
I love we're just doubling down on promoting divorce in our past two episodes here. We're like, look at what you could do without a man.
We don't need men. We don't need children. This whole season has been about the things we don't need. But it's truly because we just want the best for people, with or without that financial piece there. We talk a lot about money, but we can't talk about money without talking about the realities of how emotional it is to make these decisions.
It is, for sure. Yeah.
And what I want to reassure people who are listening, and what I hope they take away from this, is that as hard as divorce or a relationship breakdown is, the really hard part is usually pretty short-lived, even if that short-lived is like a year or two, things do eventually settle out. So as scary and difficult as it is to go through, you can emerge on the other side with more freedom, more autonomy, more life satisfaction, more happiness, and even more financially secure. It's just going through it that it's hard, but what's on the other side can be incredible.
I would agree.
I think like my one question for you, Annie, too, is what would your advice be for someone who is contemplating either divorce or a prenup, or who is in a situation that you've been in before and wondering what their next step should be?
So I would say if you're thinking about a prenup, or if you're thinking about getting married and you haven't turned your mind to a prenup, just go talk to a lawyer about it. You know, a lawyer will do a consult for you. Usually they're a few hundred dollars. And it's well worth it to just understand. A lot of people don't even know what the default is, right? So what would we be contracting out of with a prenup?
That's so crazy that we're all getting married without actually knowing what the default is.
Yeah, right? Can we actually, I don't know. What is the default?
Oh, it's, well, for property division, it's 50-50. Right? Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought.
And then spousal support, it's complex. It like depends on circumstances very much. So, and then like Bridget and I said before, child support's really straightforward as well. But to just go and have someone explain what you can do with a prenup and what you'd be contracting out of, et cetera. And then anyone contemplating divorce, I mean, this one's more of a feels one. This is less of a money one. I think, you know, like if you're like, maybe I should get divorced, then you kind of know really like where your heart is at. So just listen to that.
I love that you just used our podcast name in your explanation.
Yeah.
More about the feels, less about the money. Yeah.
It is on that one. Yeah. But like we've said, like, it's not a great financial decision. Like, it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
But it's worth it if that's how you truly feel. Like, it's not, that's not going to change in my experience.
Just the price of your happiness.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, it's a lot. I'm, you know, way more broke now than I was when we were married, but way happier. So
how many of the biggest decisions we make in our life are so deeply attached to money, but are not financial decisions? Like, that is a crazy thought.
All of them.
Having kids.
Yeah. Each buying one. A house often.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like I learned a lot today about the realities of divorce, the reality of why you should get a prenup before you get married. But you can still get
Nick
one
has
after.
A conversation about a prenup coming up.
I know. I just think it's really interesting to actually consider, yeah, that you don't have to do nothing. There are options that exist. And most of us just think like, oh, I'm just getting married. I don't need to think about the long-term considerations of the biggest decision of my life. I'll just deal with it if that happens.
Yeah, everyone just thinks about the wedding. We don't want to think about the marriage. It's just the wedding.
Or its potential breakdown. But it is a wise financial decision to do so. Either side of it, right? Just to know, just to understand the law and know what you're getting into legally and financially.
And this is coming from a lawyer, so we have to take her seriously, everyone.
But this is not legal advice.
In unison. Where can people find you, Annie, if they want to just consume your content as much as Bridget has?
I love that. Thanks, Bridget. I love your comments on my stuff. So I am at Get On Broke on TikTok and Instagram, or getonbroke.ca.
Awesome. And we'll link all of those in our show notes for listeners. Amazing. And yeah, well, that was great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah,
thank you guys.
Awesome.
That was fun.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Money Feels. You can subscribe to our podcast anywhere you listen. And if you want to support the show, you can join our Patreon for bonus episodes or leave us a review. In the meantime, we'll be back in a few weeks for season 6.
You can follow us on Instagram at Mixed Up Money for me, at Bridgie Casey for Bridget, and at Money Feels Podcast. And we'll see you next time.